first impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springson of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Ed Springston Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringston.com, my blog. For you guys that are new to the show, 858-683-1326 and 502-805-0334 are the call-in numbers, as always. And for you guys in the listening queue, we appreciate you being there. Just make sure you hit that number one on your dial pad so we'll know you want to get on there, and we'll get you on just as soon as possible. This Wednesday night, Dale the Truth should be joining us momentarily. I'm not sure what's going on. He might be having some problems with his computer because I saw him get online and jump right back off. So he should be with us in a few minutes. In the meantime, we do have a lot to talk about tonight, as always. We try to bring you a fact-loaded show with all kinds of opinion. And I tell you, we've got a real interesting story that continues going on right here in Louisville. Louisville Metro Council President Jim King has had ethics complaints filed against him on more than one occasion for alleged conflicts of interest because of the bank he owns and operates, King Southern Bank. This story is interesting because Jim King has traditionally voted on zoning changes and everything else through the Metro Council as an elected Metro Council member, and it has created a problem and created a bunch of ethics complaints, one of which I filed in October. There's one ongoing now that there will be another meeting on tomorrow with Janice Rucker filing. But essentially, the argument has always been, how can Jim King approve a zoning change through the Metro Council when his bank that he owns and operates is receiving financial consideration. It's obviously an ethical concern. Well, King has finally said that he will not be voting on any zoning cases, on any more zoning cases at all to come before the council until he receives an opinion from the Louisville Metro Ethics Commission that he requested in January that he hasn't received yet. Right now, the commission is considering three different complaints against Jim King and his request for their opinion this Thursday. So it's going to be interesting. Deborah Kent, the legal counsel for the commission, says she's looking into the issues. I've got some problems with Deborah Kent because Deborah Kent has a history of contacting the complainants outside of the actual Ethics Commission hearings itself, and that's not exactly, to me, ethical at all. But we'll get into that in just a second. How are you, Dale?
And I'm okay. I was late to the show. I wanted to come on here and defend the Constitution, and then I realized that I just didn't feel like it was right, and, you know, I prayed about it, and, you know, that's where we stand. Jack Conway invitation there, sorry.
There you go. We're going to get to Jack Conway in a few minutes, actually. But
Jack the Conway. Conway's been getting straight and has a wife. Go ahead.
Well, this whole Jim King case is interesting. Now he says he's not going to vote on his zoning cases until he gets this opinion. But what makes it so interesting to me is the Ethics Commission in October decided they were going to rule against my claim against King based on his King Southern Bank and voting on interest they were going to make him money. They said that a one-year period had passed. What most people don't understand is, you know, when you file a complaint with the Ethics Commission, you've got to file them within 1 year of the incident, or here's the big thing, or within 1 year of reasonable discovery. And see, that's where the Ethics Commission has this gray area. They've been relying solely on the one-year statute and not allowing any argument for reasonable discovery. Well, what's happened now is Janice Rucker has been going through the mill for the last 2 months over this crap because the Ethics Commission is trying to find any way and every way they can to throw out the Jim King case there. But unfortunately for the Ethics Commission, people like myself and others have pointed out the obvious about their own rules. So now they're trying to do anything they can to throw Janice Rucker's situation out. And it's totally wrong because I tell you, Deborah Kent, this is a person I have a lot of problems with. Deborah Kent is a legal counsel for the commission. Deborah Kent actually contacted me back in October outside of the Ethics Commission hearing and the scope of her authority and has done the same thing with Janice Rucker on multiple occasions. So to me, the Ethics Commission legal counsel now is committing unethical behavior. It's very disturbing. So what's the answer to this? What can we do to fix this? I don't know. I'm really curious to see what they come up with tomorrow on Janice Rucker's latest claim against Jim King. I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. It's just very interesting. It looks like they're going out of their way to protect the kingdom. Does that make sense?
No, it doesn't make sense. I mean, there's always a conflict of interest there. I'm just trying to find out with Jim King. I think we talked some time back about the possibility that if Greg Fisher ever got to move on up the Democratic Hill, Jim King could be an appointed mayor, which is kind of scary that this guy wasn't he president of the Metro Council for a while?
Well, he still is, yeah.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, he was in the beginning, yeah. I forget one of the dirty six in the first six district took it over, and then he was again, right? So he's been chairman of the council on a couple of occasions now, and he's pretty power hungry. I mean, I'd stay away from that bank of his.
Well, you know, the FBI came in February, and it started investigating. They refused to say that they're looking for anything specific, but most of the questioning, from what I understand, centers around Jim King. I can't understand why they haven't went to King Southern Bank in Chaplin, Kentucky, because that's where King hides all of these different connections and money that he doesn't want anybody to know about. In my opinion, some of it is illegal money. That's just my opinion. I can't prove it because I can't get access to the records because they're not government records. But it's interesting because I haven't heard one thing mentioned about the Chaplin, Kentucky location. That was the original King Southern Bank, and that's where King runs a lot of this business through. Including all these properties that are creating all the zoning messes that myself and Janice Rucker have tried to move forward. So we're trying to figure out all of that. I'm still waiting for the FBI. From what I was told, they're probably going to call me. They want to look at all the information I've got, and believe me, It'll fill a storage room. So when I get that call again, I'll let everybody know. But, you know, we're still waiting on that call and see how it goes. But tomorrow's going to be real interesting for anybody that wants to go down to at 4 o'clock tomorrow. The Ethics Commission is having their hearing, and you probably want to go listen to it live. And in the meantime, we've got other news going on in Louisville. As everybody knows by now, former Louisville Metro Councilman Hal Heiner, former District 19 Councilman, has announced that he is running for governor. He made the official announcement yesterday. This has been one of the worst-kept secrets over the last several months. There has been. But he made his official announcement yesterday, and he is bringing along with him as his running mate, Lexington Fayette County Councilwoman, or former Councilwoman, I should say, Casey Crosby, and they kicked off the campaign event yesterday in Lexington. Your thoughts on that?
Hello, where'd you go, Ed?
I'm here.
Oh, okay. You cut out on my end. I didn't know where you went there. Go ahead.
Oh, I apologize. Don't know what caused that. What do you think about that?
I didn't know if I wanted you to bring up this or not to bring this. So I kind of knew you would. And, you know, I heard a little bit of you and Ed talking last night. And I was like, my gosh, I was afraid you all were about to crown Hal Heiner's ass governor for a minute. This guy couldn't win mayor against a horrible Democrat mayor candidate, and then he picks the running mate. Remember, Casey Crosby was such a bad candidate that that's how they got started. They're a little neocon who was both a state and Republican and national Republican officer was so bad that she couldn't beat Hollenbeck. And you yourself told me how pathetic Hollenbeck was, right?
Yes.
But she couldn't beat Hollenbeck, and that's what caused the neocons to get mad at us because we dared even be friends with Ken Mohman, who was in the prime or in the general election against her. So now they're going to run for state office together. I don't know. I'm really excited to see. He's going to keep his word. Jamie Comer is going to wait until after the 2014 elections, as he should, before he files. And I can't wait to see who he picks as a running mate because I'm not a Hal Heiner fan. I know you and Ed like him, but I'm not impressed.
Well, I actually do like Hal Heiner. I think Hal Heiner is a pretty incredible guy, but at the same time, though, I mean, let's make things real serious. Let's talk reality here. You know, Hal Heiner barely lost the mayor's race. It ain't like he got blew out, but he barely lost the mayor's race. And I know Greg Fisher was an inferior candidate, but he barely lost the mayor's race in a totally dominant Democratic community. I mean, this community always votes Democrat. The Metro Council is a great example of that. Hal Heiner lost the mayor's race because he didn't pick up any West End votes. And the West End always goes pro-Democrat by a large majority, and they did in this case, and that's the only thing that gave Greg Fisher a narrow victory. And when we look
I agree that if he was running right now, I mean, if somebody was in Hal Heiner's back pocket or they were in his close personal circle of influence, I agree it would be really good for him if he could be the Republican candidate for governor right now. I'm sure he'd really do well against whatever criminal element that the Democrat Party puts up. But thank goodness we still have a primary, and he's not going to be appointed the nominee. We know the establishment party wants him to be, from the county party to the state party to the national party, where K.C. Sunshine Crosby is a national committee woman. Don't get me started on that. She's a committee woman. And she's a state Republican official, but she doesn't think she should step down from those spots. So not only do they tell us that we're supposed to stay out of primaries if you're in a Republican Party, she's both an official on the state and national level and is going to be the candidate. That doesn't seem like a little conflict of interest to you?
Well, no, I totally agree with you on that conflict of interest. I think the best thing Casey Crosby can do is step down from those positions as a candidate.
She's power hungry.
I'm in 100% agreement with you there. She's already said she's not going to, and I think that's actually going to create a lot of problems for them.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get into the Todd Hollenbeck versus Casey Crosby race, again, Casey Crosby didn't get blown out, you know, and the Hollenbeck name, you know, and the circles, you know, is the same thing as the Butler name anymore. It's just
the name,
but as a candidate, that's why they get votes.
I agree, but I'm just saying as a candidate and as an elected official, I realize we just had to deal with Richie Farmer, and thank goodness Jamie Comer is still fumigating the place from where he and his girlfriend's left behind. But as a candidate and as an elected official, does it get any worse than Todd Hollenbeck, the fourth or fifth or whatever he is? He's the worst you can have. And she got beat by him, and now she thinks she's going to be lieutenant governor. So I think it's hilarious because the neocons love Heiner and Crosby. They, you know, the bottom line is Neocons loved Richie Farmer, and Jamie Comer came up and cleaned up behind Richie Farmer. So that's the difference. I'm not saying there's anything bad about how Heiner's a candidate. I hear about what a wonderful businessman he is. I know he's like a multi-billionaire, whatever, and all that stuff with his big, huge farm and all. I hear he's a great guy. But again, I prefer Jamie Comer, and he couldn't have picked a worse running mate than Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Well, I tell you, considering both barely lost their elections in predominantly Democratic areas and everything like that, I really don't have – I don't see the neocon label holding against them as much as you do. I think what really hurts this ticket is the fact that Heiner is from Louisville, and he's a millionaire, not a multi-billionaire. But just make that distinction.
I don't know. I haven't seen his numbers.
Well,
like you said, it's not public record. I'll take your word.
Well, I've spoken with Hal on many occasions when he first started running for office, you know, a long time ago. He used to be on our old show back when we were doing KJK and that kind of thing. So, yeah. You know, but Hal to me is a class act. I don't understand this race because I think that Jamie Comer, the establishment Republicans are going to sit there in public and say they love the guy, but behind his back they're trashing him like crazy because he brought down Richie Farmer. One of their own, if you will, and
yeah.
You know, so that's a major play that a lot of.
Well, they did
the
same
scenes...
thing with Comer. I mean, it's easy to me what happened there. They did the same thing Ed with Comer as they did with Rand Paul. You know how much the establishment hated Rand Paul, and I will keep to my grave to reminding people how Rand Paul was not allowed to speak in his hometown at the 2008 state Republican convention, but then two years later at the very same building. They were all crashing the walls to try to get in. So they did the same thing with Comer. They didn't even like Comer in his primary. And here's the thing about Comer. When nobody else was talking about marijuana or hemp, except for us extreme radicals, Jamie Comer came out to an event where there was an independent viewing of a movie about the truth about hemp and marijuana out in Old Louisville. And Jamie Comer came out there on a Saturday night. There were no cameras. There was no media. He was there because he believed in the issue.
Well, and I'm with you on that. I totally get that. And Jamie Comer is getting the same effect now. So the question, you know, really the problem I've got, I think Hal would have done a much better, had a better chance in this election if he would have run for Louisville mayor, because I think Hal Heiner would be the next Louisville mayor had he taken on Greg Fischer. And I firmly believe that because I think that most of the Democrat establishment, primarily in the West End, have realized once again that they've been duped. That we have yet another Democratic mayor who has lied through the teeth, who is a racist scumbag, in my opinion, and won't do anything for the entire community just so he can take care of his East End buddies. And this workforce training facility that I emphasized a couple of months ago on the website at LouisvillePolitics.com is just one more example of that. And by the way, we're going to have more updates on that going forward. We just found out about the Kevin Cosby payoff within the last couple of weeks. He got $300,000 a year to Simmons, finally getting some kind of a daggone accreditation that he wanted, and that was the payoff. I told everybody it was six figures. That's what it is. Now he has $300,000
a year. I've got to ask you one more question before we get off this governor's race. Go ahead.
I'm just saying, go ahead.
No, I don't want to interrupt you. I mean, I know we'll have plenty of time for the next year and whatever to talk about the governor's race. But here's my question for you, Ed. Do you agree that people should at least wait until the 2014 primaries, if not the 2014 general election? Do you agree that people should at least wait until after the primaries to file and run for office for next year?
In all honesty, in normal situations, yes, I would. I would have thought that Hal Heiner should have waited to make this announcement until at least late October. By that time, most people have made their minds up and everything else, and he can go out and start taking advantage of campaign funds. But, you know, for Hal, and I understand to some degree, I'm not saying I agree with his decision, but I understand to some degree why he announced so early, and it's simply because he has to get known throughout the state. You know, we have a lousy reputation in Louisville across the state. Period.
Oh, yeah,
I don't care who you are.
I mean, when's the last time
so,
a Louisvillian
in order,
was elected
well,
governor?
In order for him to overcome that, it's going to take a lot of time, and he's not going to get money that's readily available to folks like Jamie Comer, who has a reputation around the state as the sitting state ag commissioner. So he's got to start a lot earlier trying to raise money and things like that. So I agree with your premise.
Here's the reason I answered that question, because Jamie Comer has been very honest, and everything I've ever known about Jamie Comer, I mean, he could turn on us tomorrow like any politician. He's been about one of the most honest politicians, to use that term loosely, politician that I've ever met. And Jamie made a simple statement to CN2 Politics about how he thinks that people should simply wait until after this year's election process to file for office. He didn't name billionaire Hal by name. He didn't name Casey and the Sunshine Band by name. Jamie didn't name either of those. He just said people should wait to after this year's elections. And did you see what Heiner shot back with? That's why when I listened to a little bit of y'all's show last night, and y'all said this was going to be a fair, even, clean race, Heiner shot back with a press release saying that Jamie Comer was being sophomoric by saying that. What is that bullshit?
Well, I think, you know,
Heiner was already crying like a bitch.
No. In all
honesty, why would he say it was sophomoric for saying that people should wait, Ed, until after the 2014 elections? Because he didn't like it because Comer didn't one up on him.
Well, wait a minute, because that's politics. Hal has made
it clear he's going to be politics. It's going to be like
Jamie Comer. Jamie Comer never made that statement until he knew that Hal Heiner was going to announce. So that was a little.
That's my point. It could. We don't know who's going
to
file. I mean, we don't know who else is going
to
file. We could have 8 Republicans file. There's 5 or 6 Republicans running for U.S. Senate, but the mainstream media doesn't talk about
that. That's the point. Hal Heiner is his competition, and he didn't have to mention Hal Heiner's name because it had been publicized so well throughout the whole Commonwealth. There was nothing there. He didn't have to use his name. It was automatically implied. You know, so that's neither here nor there. To me, that's just tit for tat. It wasn't anything serious. What I'm waiting for is for the real primary race to kick off after the November elections, and I want to see, we're going to see if Hal Heiner and Jamie Comer are the people that either one of us think they are. We're going to find out real quick, and that's a race I'm actually looking forward to. I think that Jamie Comer has the edge, but I'm also looking forward to seeing how they handle the primary election itself and if they're going to end up going to Mitch McConnell territory or if they're going to take the high ground and just stick to the issues. That's going to be interesting for me.
I expect Comer to take the high ground. Like I said, I don't know who else is going to get in the race. It is very early. I'm glad that Comer has taken the high road but not filing yet. And we can have 7 or 8 candidates, like I said. I think right now, if it truly is just those two, you know, I don't make bones about it. I don't hide my loyalties here. I say sign me up for Comer because he's the constitutional candidate.
Well, let's make this clear, though. Hal Heiner hasn't filed to run either. Nobody can file to run.
Then why the big press? Why the big press conference?
Because he made the announcement that he intended to run. That's
okay,
all he can
fair.
Do at this time. That's all he can do at this time. The press made this the issue. He just made it known that he intended to run for governor. Nobody is a legitimate signed up anything for governor at this time.
He called
it's
a press
early.
Conference, Ed. How could they not make it an issue when he called it a press conference?
Just because you call it a press conference don't mean they have to make it an issue. I call press conferences.
I mean nobody could have showed up, I guess, and he could have said they were against them because they didn't show up. So the press had to be there.
Nah, we're nitpicking now. The bottom line is Hal Heiner felt he had to announce early, and you know, Jamie Comer did what he could to offset it right now and try to take the high road. It appears like he's taking the high road. I've got respect for both of these guys. I'm not saying negative on either one of them because I got a lot of respect for both of them, and I'm curious to see where this is going to lead after the November election. When everything becomes official and the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed and they're on the candidate list, I want to see how they run the races because this is going to be very interesting. And Hal Heiner also put himself in a spot because everything that he does from here out is going to be looked at under a microscope because now he has announced he plans to run for governor. So, you know, he's going to have to endure the next few months of being under the microscope, and that's a situation Jamie Comer won't have to even worry about as an official candidate. I mean, he's already
in the
ground every day.
Did you see the CN2 interview where they sat down with Hal and Casey?
I don't watch CN2. From what I understand, only about 10 people do. I don't really want to be the 11th. Go ahead.
Well, their Facebook page has a few thousand, so that totally flies in the face with what you just said. But anyway, CN2 did an interview with both of them, and they just basically asked Hal because he wants to be governor so bad. He's making his intention known so early. They asked him about the current governor. They asked him about Peepaw and Peepaw and Jack the Congay and all this stuff about what about gay marriage. And they asked Heiner about what he thought about it, and he basically refused to tell them his opinion. He said, this is going to be a campaign about positive issues. We're not going to talk about it. I'm like, really? You can't tell us your opinion about it? He just had that televangelist smile and wouldn't tell us what he thought about it. Don't you have a problem with him not telling us how he feels about the issue?
Actually, when it comes to gay issues, no. I really don't. As I've mentioned so many times on this daggone show, and you're aware of this, I get sick of the GGGA attitude, the God, gays, guns, and abortion deciding elections, because those are legal issues that the Supreme Court has ruled on or is continuing to rule on. This is not a race about gay marriage. It's not going to be a race about God. It's not going to be a race about guns, and it shouldn't be a race about abortion either. The GGGA is the emotional issues that have absolutely nothing to do with government's purpose and role in our Commonwealth or in the United States of America. Those are personal and emotional issues.
It's a current event. I mean, did you and Ed talk about it the last two nights?
No. I think. Well, we're getting ready to talk about the gay issue, actually, with Governor Steve Scheer.
Did you and Ed not talk about it last night? Did y'all not talk about people and Jack Conway?
We talked about the fact that Jack Conway is not doing his constitutional duty.
Okay.
Because he chose to ignore the Constitution.
Then shouldn't they also ask people who want to be governor? Like you just said, he's the only one who has made his intentions known that he wants to be governor. So that's the very first candidate who has said he wants to hold Peepaw's position. Isn't it fair to ask him about a current event involving the current governor? I think it is.
I think asking him his personal opinion on gay marriage was frivolous. I don't think he should have answered it. I'm glad that he didn't. Now, if they would have asked him the question and said, Governor Steve Beshear is pursuing the appeal to this, would you follow that same path? Yes, that's relevant.
But he could have said that on his own. He just said he wasn't going to talk about that.
Why should he? I'm just saying.
If I was advising
Hal Heiner on his campaign, and somebody asked where he stood on gay marriage, where his personal stance was on gay marriage, I would have ignored it too. I would have told him to ignore that, because the GGGA, it's the one thing I always complained about on this show, and you're familiar with that. We've been around for years together. You know, that's just the way it is. This race shouldn't be focusing on those things. But since you brought up the gay issue, because that is our next topic here that I was planning on getting into, you know, well, we're going right to it, right? You know, it is interesting to me, because the whole problem for me in this whole issue isn't what the federal courts have said or anything else. What bothers me with this whole issue is you've got Jack Conway out there, and he makes a statement that this issue is really larger than any single person, and it's about placing people above politics. I can only say that I'm doing what I think is right. We have never asked Jack Conway to run the Attorney General's office based on his personal presumption of what he thinks is right. He even went so far as to say he prayed over the decision. No, our role, Jack Conway's role as the Attorney General of this Commonwealth that we elected him to do, was uphold the Kentucky Constitution. And in 2004, our Kentucky Constitution stated, and it was a constitutional amendment voted on of the people, by the people, and for the people, that said marriage is between one man and one woman. So it's not up to Jack Conway to tell us whether he agrees with that decision. It's up to Jack Conway to follow through and do his job appealing that decision based on our laws. So he's the one who made it political. The real surprise.
I agree. I mean, he's another one who wants to be governor, and he thought he made his cute little statement. He made his cute little statement about how this is discrimination, but he also talked to his wife and prayed about it. So see, he was covering the left wing and the right wing in the same statement, because he wants their vote for governor. So I totally agree with you. I made it very clear. I'm kind of a radical compared to the mainstream, because I don't think the government should have its damn nose in marriage at all, because marriage should have nothing to do with the government. There's nothing in the, you don't talk about the God issue. As you said, we are talking about this here again. You just say we don't talk about that issue, but the God issue is the Bible says nothing about a marriage license, because there's nothing biblical about a marriage license. If we want to know the truth, marriage license came about because people in the Deep South were worried about blacks and whites marrying. So we couldn't have that if they tell the truth about it. So the government should not even be in marriage. I still don't know why gays or straights want the government in their bedroom.
Well, as we mentioned last night on the show, me and Ed Martin went a little bit more deeper than that, but as we talked about last night on the show, I don't care what you do in your bedroom. I don't care who you choose to live with. That's not my problem.
Right.
That's your personal problem, not mine.
Right.
I have no business in that. You know, and the issue for me, and what's funny to me is because, as I mentioned last night, I've got family members who are gay and lesbian. I also have plenty of people that I identify as friends who are gay and lesbian. I consider Chris Hartman, the guy who's in charge of Fairness Alliance. You know, he leads the Fairness Alliance. I consider him a friend. But when you talk to people within the community, most cases, when you give the argument that, hey, look, if you want the same legal rights that I enjoy as a married man, the tax breaks, you know, and all those different things. If you want those same legal rights, then let's just go ahead and get rid of the term marriage. Make sure that we go with this union, you know, the union of two people, regardless of whether you're hetero or homosexual, you know, and let's give equal rights across the board, because that's what we're entitled to, is equality, you know. But when given that choice, most of the people within that community that I've talked to, bar none, it's amazing to me, no, we have the right to be called married, and we want people to recognize that. So they're not. So is it really about you can walk around and just say you're married for some kind of a an ego trip, or is this really about the law? As I mentioned to Ed last night, and I'll tell you, me and you are friends. You know, if we chose to live together and cohabitate, you know, as heterosexual men, not homosexual men, but if we chose to live together and cohabitate as heterosexual men, okay, we're sharing bills, we bought a house together, everything else, all these other things, should we not be entitled to the same rights as anybody else that identifies as a couple for legal purposes?
Well, that's why I said, unlike Jack Conway, who wants to take both sides of the issue, wants to talk about how he's this family man, and he talks about it and prayed about it, and also says it's discrimination, I am not running for any public office, and I get slack from both sides because I'm not going to defend them out in the street, you know, where we hear this crowd out here saying, hey, we're queer and we're here, and I'm the straight guy in the car saying I'm straight and I'm late, you know, I'm
right.
Not going to stand up in the streets with them and pray with them, but then the right wing gets mad at me because I'm also not going to attack them because I don't care what they do in the bedroom. It just goes back to about a business deal. We always hear about marriage as a contract. If you sign a business contract tomorrow, Ed, to do business with mm-hmm. this network, with some other business or something, the government's mm-hmm. not sitting there over your shoulder. But every marriage contract, the government is sitting over their shoulder, and that's why I said, every time I say this, people say, oh, well, we're not ready for that deal. Society's not ready for that. Well, you know, society should be ready for getting the government out of marriage, period. So I fall down the middle on this issue because I'm not defending the gays' rights to quote-unquote marriage, and I also don't want to go door-to-door and see what they're doing in their bedroom. I'm right there in the middle.
You know, I had to get a marriage license by the state, but I got married before God. I took my vows and made my promises to God and to my wife.
Did Satan make it a better marriage or a stronger or more wholesome?
No. I have no allegiance to the Commonwealth of Kentucky because of my spouse. I have my allegiance to God. That's who the vows are made to. And unlike Jack Conway, who's trying to use this to help ease the right wingers, you know, I don't hide my faith in God. I don't hide my faith in God. I don't deny that I pray every day, and I make sure people on this show know it on occasion. I always talk about it, you know. But, you know, I think it's, you know, now that I think about it, I really think that's why Jack Conway was supposedly driven to these false tears yesterday, because he wants so bad to be governor that he had to admit there's a God that he prays and he was sucking
up
to the
right.
He does.
That was made him cry. He had to admit that he's going to get some of those votes.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's what it is. He had to cry over that. But it's interesting because he's not doing his job. And that, to me, is the big beef. And, you know, from the people that I've spoken to, and I've spoken to about 100 people over the last couple of days or since yesterday morning when I was at the place, I've spoken to about 100 people, and I've also paid attention to the social media outlets, and I've looked at polls. And, you know, the clear majority of people in Kentucky are angry at Jack Conway for making a personal choice instead of upholding the oath of office that he took, that we elected him to take. So this is going to backfire on Jack. This is another Aqua Buddha as far as I'm concerned. And he's going to pay a price for it, I'm sure. You know, we've got another great story really, really starting to take hold here, and I'm loving every minute of it, and it concerns our good friend, U.S. Representative John Yarmuth. as we now know, the VA is planning on building this big new VA medical center right there at right there at Brownsboro Road and the Waterson Expressway. What's interesting here is John Yarmuth is now going on record that something is wrong here because the VA just got charged an extra 31% on a new appraisal. As everybody knows, back in 2011. I'm trying to think. It may have been 2011. In 2011, we had the first appraisal completed and done for this property that they wanted to buy for this new VA hospital. That appraisal was at $9.8 million. That's what we were supposed to pay to, now think about this name, Jonathan Blue. He's the one that's getting this. You know, one of the greatest guys in Louisville when it comes to funding and channeling money into Democrat campaigns. But yep. Jonathan Blue has this property, control of that property. We agreed to $9.8 million. Then all of a sudden last year, or in recent months, the BA decided that that we were going to have a new appraisal. The same people who did the first appraisal did a second appraisal. And lo and behold, a year later, the second appraisal went up 31%. So it raised the value of that property by $3.1 million. How do you do that? Well, John Yarmuth is out there saying this is wrong. He's asking the VA to explain this, and he's trying to get to the bottom of this and everything else. That is misleading, and I tell you why. Because John Yarmuth has been on top of this from the very beginning. He's acting like he didn't know anything. February of 2007, John Yarmuth announced the plans for the new Veterans Hospital were on track to get done. He went on telling us this project was going to be open in 2013 at a GLI luncheon, telling us all that it's a six-year process and everything's already been approved. And guess what? They haven't even broke ground yet. June of 2008, John Yarmuth took big gains in the press to make sure that the whole world knew that that he was the one who had secured $45 million for site acquisition and the prep work to start the construction on this new VA Health Center in Louisville, which hasn't started yet, 6 years later. In November of 2011, John Yarmuth talked about the Brownsboro site, bragging about what a great place this was going to be, and then he changed his mind and said it was going to be completed by 2016. We still haven't got ground broken yet. June of 2012, the Department of Veterans Affairs finally chose these acres of land we're talking about for the new VA. It's called the Midlands. Okay, Jonathan Blue is the one controlling this. And, of course, we've had two different appraisals done on it. And John Yarmuth is still praising this property and this plan just mere months ago.
How much money did the Blue folks give to the Yarmuth campaign? That's what I want to know.
Right, well, that's the whole thing. So Jonathan Blue just got an extra 31% payment on the land. That's a political payback, folks. That's how you do this. That's how you do it. You have Todd Blue getting the downtown stuff done, and he gets all this political payback and grant money. Jonathan Blue is out here owning this property, and he wants more money, so they go ahead and jump up an appraisal 1 year later by 31% in a depressed real estate market. So now he gets an extra, you know, $3.1 million, and John Yarmuth now says, oh, something ain't right here. Well, as we can clearly show from at least 2007, and this was a quick Google search, folks. I didn't do anything heavy on this. You know, as we can see, this is constant. So it's not like John Yarmuth can act like he's not in on the game. John Yarmuth is one of the biggest political insiders there are in the Democratic Party. He's a hack. So I found it very, very interesting that we're still having this discussion. Construction still hasn't started, and nobody's answering that question. Go ahead.
No, I just thinking back again as a military brat and someone whose father is a decorated Korean War veteran, I remember what my dad and his friends were saying back when this came up. They all along, I didn't know who was going to be giving contributions to whom, and we always had to wait to see whose ox was being gored. But what about the fact that a couple of years back, they were looking at different sites? They were looking at a site over here near me, over here close to Fagan Bush Lane. They were looking at another site close to the old hospital. And it ends up going exactly where the Yarmuths and the McConnells and all want it. And again, how many old veterans, when you look at the old veterans out there who are in their 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s, how many of them live close to downtown? The honest truth is most of them are more out on the south end. That's just the truth of demographics. So my dad and all his friends knew it wasn't going to go where the veterans wanted it. It was going to go where the Yarmuths and the McConnells wanted it at.
You betcha, you betcha. And so, you know,
not just Yarmuth, but McConnell in there. Any Republicans are pissing their depends. Listen to me saying that. McConnell was right there with Yarmuth, shaking his head in approval about the location.
Well, actually, I was getting ready to bring us to that because John Yarmuth is not alone. Mitch McConnell went on his own GANI Great Guy tour as well, bragging about how he was able to get $75 million for this project, talking about the construction of the VA hospital is a top priority of his. yet we still don't have it either. So, you know, to my understanding, between the two of them, that would be $120 million that has been secured in the last 6 years, and we still haven't broke ground yet, but we increased the value of the land to take care of a political supporter by 31%.
And took them many years?
Yeah, well, this all started back in
2007. They're wanting it. Make sure I got this straight. They're wanting it at what location? They're wanting it down there when you're a Brownsboro site, correct?
Yep.
That's and here's the thing. The veterans told them, I can pull up stories. I would go start page and pull these stories from 2 or 3 years ago where the veterans told them all the things wrong with that location. And they didn't want to listen to it because they didn't want to put it where the veterans were. They wanted to put it where it was convenient for them and maybe some of the high-dollar doctors were going to be at. But the bottom line is they knew it wasn't good for the streetlight purposes. They knew it wasn't good for traffic purposes. There were a lot of reasons not to have it at that location, and they knew that. The public hearings brought that out. There were several people that spoke up when over 80 or 90 people were attending these hearings 2 or 3 years ago about the problems that would happen at the Brownsville site. They talked about the limited ability to expand, the noise pollution, security, trucks, helicopters, the taking of houses in the future by our favorite eminent domain. They talked about the dangers of medical gases and utilities, biohazards, but all that didn't matter because they were just the veterans and they weren't going to be the politicians in the photo ops.
Well, and that's exactly it. I mean, John Yarmuth didn't attend any of these daggone meetings about this at all. There was no neighborhood meeting or anything else he attended. The neighbors were totally against this. The veterans were loud and clear against this. I went to some of these veterans meetings, and there wasn't one veteran who wanted that location moved. The Zorn Avenue location works for them. But the fix was in, right? I mean, as we're being told in the chat room, we've got Martina in there. We've got a good friend, Paul, in there, and they're telling us all this other stuff, too. But I can tell you for a fact the veterans were against it, and I am a vet. I was against it, so I'm one of that crowd. You know, so when we look at all of this, I mean, this is clearly nothing more than the fix was in, and this is what we're going to do. We're going to play the game, but we're going to do what we want to do anyway, and we're going to take care of our buddies. In this case, I believe it's Jonathan Blue. And don't discount the Corradinos in this. Corradinos are a big supporter of John Yarmuth, who usually do all the dirty work for him. Rumor has it they were involved in this fix as well. I can't prove that. That's my opinion, but I really, really do like my sources.
And they had to say, if they were worried about how many acres were needed for this 120 or so bed hospital, there was availability for more land at the Chamberlain Lane site, more land at the Fagenbush Lane site. So the audience heard what certainly had to be reassuring to them. Oh, they were going to listen to them. You know, it'll be cozy, but it'll work. They did not take into consideration what the ones who were going to be hobbling to the hospital, the ones who were going to have to get their grandchildren or the taxi or the buses to take them across town to the hospital. They did not consider their needs.
Well, if you remember also, Jerry Abramson was quite angry because he wanted to put this in downtown Louisville where there's absolutely no room. You know, he was angry because it didn't go down there and make
well,
him
you know, Paul asked us in the chat room, like you said, Paul asked us in the chat room what the difference was between organized crime syndicates and the government, and my response was because organized crime syndicates actually take care of the elderly and the young. Government doesn't.
I'll actually agree with that. You know, so, I mean, we've got all of these different problems going on, and nothing is being done to correct them. You know, it's very disturbing. And I tell you, we've even got even more stuff going on. I really want to get into a couple other stories before we run out of time here. We're just not going to break tonight. We've got too many things. I'm just going to go ahead and blow through the breaks, man. Why not? You know, our advertisers will understand.
And, you know, Bill Clinton,
we are.
Turn.
We will.
Go away,
we,
buddy.
Well, we ran commercials at the top of the hour because I knew we'd have a full hour. So we'll make sure we get him in before we get out of here. But, you know, look at Lois Lerner. You know, she's a former director of the IRS. She's the one who ordered all these assaults on the Tea Party organizers and anybody that was conservative. You know, she was brought before Darrell Issa's committee today. We thought that she was going to testify, the House Oversight Committee. And once again, she invoked her right and took the Fifth. She claimed the Fifth Amendment once again and refused to testify. So Issa closed the meeting. You know, what is the deal here? When is it acceptable? I mean, maybe in a communist society, but when is it acceptable in a free society of the United States of America for a government agent to claim the Fifth so that they can't be held accountable to their job with the American people? This is very, very disturbing to me, especially since Issa went on record on Fox News Sunday stating that Lerner had agreed to waive her Fifth Amendment rights, which is the only reason that he had asked her to go ahead and come in, because she had agreed to waive them. Of course, you know, her attorney is immediately saying no, that that's not true, yet they've got emails back and forth, you know, that basically say, yeah, so the emails are shared. Everybody's going to know about that in the next couple of days. So what happened over the last couple of days to make Lois Lerner renege on you know, actually answering questions?
Well, I don't think she was going to answer questions. I think she was going to take the fifth, drink the fifth, do something with the fifth, because she's the face of big government. I mean, she's a former IRS official. We know how they feel about us. I've said it many a time. None of us pay taxes, at least none of us in this audience, because we want to or because we have to, because we don't want to, and the law doesn't say we have to, but we're afraid not to. And she's the face of that. She's the face of that huge, big Goliath that is government. So she was going to either sit there and just say, I take the fifth on every question, or walk out in the middle of it, a la our former councilwoman. She used to walk out on her hearings. So she wasn't going to answer any questions, I don't think. She's just the face of big government. There's no manners and no sense of propriety there. She's just going to be the Lois Lerner IRS babe that we know her to be. She's miserable, mean, vindictive, and vengeful. And she was going to sit there and just take it, basically. She led the effort to basically disenfranchise the Tea Party. She is who she is.
Well, I totally agree with you there. And it's really disturbing to me that we're still playing this game of politics and nobody's holding anybody accountable. Personally, what I think is going on, real simple, I think these email exchanges and everything else, she led Daryl Issa to think that she was going to testify. And once that went public and the whole public found out, that there was probably a visit made. You know, I know some of those visits and how they're done. I've been victimized by one of those visits, you know, but it doesn't shut my mouth. I don't care. So it's really going to be interesting.
Look best in an orange jumpsuit for about the next 40 years or so in a cell with Hillary Clinton, even though the two of them would probably both enjoy that. I think that's where she'd look best.
Oh, I do too. I think Barack Obama could join them. I also think Kathleen Sebelius should join them. There's a whole host of others, including all the Muslim Brotherhood.
I mean, it works for Illinois. You know, in Illinois, they go straight from the government state house to the prison. So we need to take a hit from Illinois and start sending the politicians straight to prison. Give them all two terms, one in office and one in the cage.
Well, let's be fair. Because when you get into being a governor in Illinois and you get into Rob Blagojevich and his predecessors, you know, at least they go ahead and pad their pockets first so they got money to hold on to when they get out. So, you know, you want to make sure they get theirs first, and that's what's going on now. It's pretty interesting when you look at all of this. Paul is asking a question in the chat room. I'll go ahead and hit it real quick, I guess. I started to mention the top of the hour, and we kind of got sideways. Paul is wanting to know what's the latest status of the Ford Training Center and Kevin Cosby. We're actually getting ready to do an updated story on that. I'm hoping to have out tomorrow. But essentially, at the very beginning of this, I told everybody that Kevin Cosby backed out because the Fisher didn't want it down at 8th and Kentucky because, quite frankly, they're racist, in my opinion. So Lynn Fisher wanted to go ahead and protect her white bread community and put it out at JCTC where it currently exists. And because she has her own worker training program, she was going to get a contract for her place to take care of employees and putting people in there to train these workers while she sits on the JCTC board. You talk about all kinds of ethics. You're crazy. But anyway, I told everybody that Kevin Cosby went ahead and backed out because he basically was told he was promised a six-figure settlement to get out of this. That's what rumors had been told to me by legitimate sources. And so I went ahead and announced that a couple of months ago. Turns out I was right. Kevin Cosby, Simmons College, just received accreditation a couple of weeks ago, full accreditation as a Bible college. And along with that accreditation, Simmons College now is eligible to receive $300,000 per year in federal grant money. Now, what that means is Kevin Cosby is the president of Simmons College. So Kevin Cosby just got a $300,000 expense account because he takes no salary on paper as the president of that college. So now he has $300,000 that he gets to control every year through the college, and that's his payoff. You know, as we've mentioned many times on here, you don't have to be a millionaire to be a millionaire's lifestyle. Just run a charity. You know, do something, you know, using other people's money. But that, to me, affirmed the six-figure payoff, and that's $300,000 every year. An accreditation that he had been trying to get for years and could not get approved all of a sudden got pushed through with the aid of Greg Fisher and presumably John Yarmuth. All of a sudden got approved, and now he gets the $300,000 in federal grant money. I don't think it's a far stretch to make that statement. And so that's your update, Paul. The lawsuit is still ongoing against Greg Fisher and Kevin Cosby by Jay Morgan. I don't have any updates on that. A lot of that stuff is now not allowed to be public record, and I'm trying to get there. And, yes, Paul, I am tired of being right. You know, it gets kind of old being right, and but when you're right, you're poor. So, you know, I'd rather be wrong on occasion than have a little money, so that'd be all right, too. But that's the way it works. But that's your update on Kevin Cosby. You know, Dale, there's another story here today, and I can't wait to get your opinion on this, because this is really interesting. 18-year-old, you know where I'm going with this, right? An 18-year-old New Jersey honor student actually filed a suit against her parents to force them to give her $650 a week in child support and continue paying her tuition at a private Catholic high school. Additionally, she wants her attorney's fees paid and her parents to pay for all her college needs. 18 years old. Apparently, this girl left home 2 days before her 18th birthday, moved in with one of her best friends, and her best friend's a lawyer, or her best friend's dad is a lawyer, who decided he wanted to sue her parents to do all of these things. Talk to me, Dale. This is so incredibly stupid, so incredibly obvious. She's penniless. She made the choice to leave home. Go ahead.
Well, I don't think she's entitled to any of it. I want to know what judge in a black movie is going to go along with this. I think it's interesting that her friend's father is a lawyer, because I think if this girl gets anything she wants out of this demand of hers, this heist that she's trying to perform here, I think she's going to make a great trial attorney one day.
Well, I tell you, apparently the judge decided she wasn't entitled to this. You know, and it was
somebody
really...
Somebody got it right
in
the black moo-moo. All right.
Well, I liked his terminology. I liked what he did. He basically said, if we're going to open the gates for 12-year-olds to sue for an Xbox or 13-year-olds to sue for an iPhone. I mean, this is a seriously slippery slope we're going to go down. But this is an 18-year-old. This is a legal adult. This isn't a 12- or 13-year-old. You know, so it is fascinating. But they are going back to court next month to determine whether her parents should pay for her college or not. You know, so this story is going to be ongoing for a little while. But, you know, how can it even get to this point? I can't understand why the judge is not admonishing her attorney for basically putting her parents through hell. You know, if I was her parents, I would be countersuing for millions of dollars for the embarrassment and all the other crap that this no-good attorney that's the dad of her friend is putting them through. This is a ridiculous...
This is a prime example of ridiculous. Yeah,
go
that's
ahead.
What I said. She's going to make a very fine trial attorney one day, because this is what they do. This is what lawyers do. They take the worst cases possible, especially in jurisdictions where they know there's never a chance of having to pay up. There's never going to be any legislative reform where losers have to pay or ridiculous lawsuits just get laughed out of the court. They're always going to have a audience of the judge up there. So this is what lawyers do. They take ridiculous cases if they think they can squeeze some bit of money out of it. So like I said, she's going to make a great trial attorney one day. I'm surprised she didn't take her union steward with her too.
Well, I'm certainly hoping that the parents are just basically acting like they're in culture shock. Now she's trying to say that her dad was overly affectionate, that her mom made her a bulimic because her mom told her once she was fat, so she decided to become bulimic so she could get skinny. You know, it's always somebody else's fault. And the bottom line is, you know, this is a spoiled little rich kid who has no appreciation or value of what she's supposed to be doing in this world. Now, I do blame her parents for that, but you can't blame the parents to not contribute to the welfare of their 18-year-old child who chooses to leave home because she doesn't want to have a curfew and doesn't want to live by the house rules. These are very, very disturbing. So, you know, I just find it an interesting story. I'm not sure how it's going to turn out. I can't even believe that it's gotten to this point that the mainstream media would make this the blow up of the year with so many other things going on, you know, protecting presidents from illegal activity, protecting future presidential candidates from illegal activity, IRS, so many other stories out there, but they want this to be the deflection. An 18-year-old is suing her parents to make them pay her child support. It's nuts.
Well, that's what I said. The judge had just laughed it out of court. If the judge had just automatically dismissed it, it would have set a precedent. We always hear about these judicial
right.
cases that set precedences, and he could have said, he or she, whoever the judge was in the Black Moo Moo, could have set the precedent right away and say, this is not going to come before my court. And we know that the judges, they see their courtroom like their church. The judge is the deity. They sit up on high. You have to stand and bow like you're in Catholic service when they come in. Well, that judge could have made a lot of friends by just throwing the case out altogether, because clearly this girl must be like that other case you heard a while back where the kid suffered from affluenza. I think she suffered from affluenza.
Yeah. Good point. I don't deny it. And you're absolutely right. The judge should have thrown this case out. To me, there's no legal basis here. I admit I'm not an attorney and I'm not a judge, but I can tell you I have spent a lot of time researching law because of the complaints that I file. And honestly, you know, an 18-year-old suing their parents for child support so that they can continue their lifestyle while living with their friend, you know, this attorney that is representing her should be admonished, disbarred, suspended, something, you know. And if the judge was smart, they would have thrown the case out, let her go ahead and come up with the thousands of dollars that it will cost for the appeals process, see if her friend's dad wanted to go that far and take it out of his pocket. It's just incredible to me. But I tell you what else is incredible, Dale. This hour has flown by yet again. It is time for final thoughts, my friend. Go ahead.
Well, you know, we didn't even get to talk about national issues yet. I'm kind of disappointed. but final thoughts is this judge, like I said, needs to set a precedent that this is not going to come before us. You're exactly right. It is a disturbance, but it's one of the minor little flaw kind that basically distracts us, as you said, from the real issues, because this is the crap they put up there in the pop culture, and they don't want you to look at what's really going on. They don't want you to look at things going on and around the world. They don't want you to look at what's going on as far as the truth about Russia and Ukraine. They don't want you to know about how the FDA, FCC, and megabanks are all spying on you. They don't want you to know about anything that's going on about how the food industry is under siege, because it's better to have these little pop culture cases. That's why this show is here. That's why this network is here. You're not going to hear that fluff stories here. It's time for people to realize they are pulling the wool over your eyes. Stop playing with the puppets. Rip the strings out the marionettes and tell them death to their new world order.
Well, there you go, man. I tell you, you know, and we did get the national stories because that is a national story. We didn't get to Russia and some of the other things that I'm sure you plan on talking about tomorrow night. By the way, what are you talking about tomorrow night?
Well, I'm glad you asked, Ed, because a lot of people are talking about what's going on in Russia. And what, you know, I think it's a good time to talk about it. We're going to talk about the fact that we have a national leader. We have a national leader who is just obsessed with taking over and how he threatens our national security. We're going to talk about how he's a threat to Ukraine and to Russia. But yes, we'll talk about tomorrow night how Barack Obama is a huge threat to our national security, and you should be worried about him taking over your country and not Vladimir Putin.
I'll be honest with you. I can't wait to hear that show. We could have spent the whole hour on that tonight. But it is disturbing, because when you look at everything that's going on here in this country, I mean, look at how far we've fallen. 18-year-olds can now sue their parents for child support, and it's not thrown out of court. A legal adult? Are you kidding me? We could put 18-year-olds in war in Afghanistan and Iraq and let them die for a country and for beliefs that they don't even know anything about. They aren't even taught it in schools, you know. And then you get into the Russia situation. It's kind of funny when you talk about Russia, because Sarah Palin told us, and I'm not a Sarah Palin fan, I've made that well known, but Sarah Palin told us back in 2008 that Vladimir Putin was going to go into Ukraine. Guess what? He now has. Mitt Romney told us in 2012 that Russia was still a major threat. Barack Obama laughed at him and accused Mitt Romney of living 20 years ago. Guess what? Were they fortune tellers? Could they predict the future? Probably not. But they did, and they did so accurately. So, you know, we've got to really look at a lot of things. So I'm looking forward to that show tomorrow night. In the meantime, that's a wrap for tonight. Don't forget, 7 o'clock tomorrow night with Dale the Truth right here on the TNT Thursday Night Truth Show. And our good friend Ken Molman on Sunday night at 7 o'clock with his favorite brand of Liberty Unbridled. I'll be back with you guys on Monday. Have a great night. Have a great week. Dale, thank you so much. We'll see you soon.